Welcome to Shift with CJ. I'm your host CJ, and together we will explore the areas of health, human performance, biohacking, psychology, and much more that will inspire you to become the best version of yourself.
You presented a very interesting topic, which was yogis were the original biohackers. Why do you say that yogis were the original biohackers?
A yogi is trying to figure out who he is, but that which is asking the question, so his nervous system, his brain, needs to be optimized. As a biohacker, you're optimizing your body, your mind, and you're trying to go beyond in terms of longevity.
A lot of people these days are asking this question, that what is this for? Why are we here? And is this all going to matter?
The role of science and biohacking will delve deeply into science. The role of science is to tell you how things are, how the universe started, how your body, mind functions, all of it.
And they're saying if you're on social media apps and if you're scrolling for 5 minutes,
yeah,
that is like scrolling over 450 feet of information.
A distracted mind will constantly go for the next kick, but the one that is meditative, historically, even today, will remain meditative.
Hello and welcome everybody to this special episode of the Shift with CJ podcast. There are multiple reasons why this is special today. I'll get to them in a while. But today I have the honor to have Mr. Manish Pol in the studio, who is a yogi, a teacher, and a world traveler. He's spreading the wisdom and the science of yoga throughout the world with his gentle approach. So please welcome Manish to the show.
Thank you, CJ. Thank you for having me.
How are you?
Very good, in fact. Very good.
Yeah, so I said this was special. One of the reasons is because me and Manish have shared time in this very studio itself. About a few months ago, we did a recording for you guys. Unfortunately, those files got deleted, corrupted. I don't know what happened, but we don't have it. But this also gives me another reason to bring Manish today. And hopefully, this time, we'll add more value than last time. And maybe that's why the universe wanted us to come together. What do you think about this?
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes we get a chance to spend some more time together. Mm-hmm.
And the other reason why this is special is because Manish and me have spent time in the nature. We have spent time behind stages.
Yeah.
We have spent time on the stage. We have shared stage together.
True.
And we have done the last thing. We were together in Bali. And we did
the full moon. Exactly.
Manish led us through a beautiful, beautiful time. I really appreciate it. Thank you. So Manish, we're mostly talking about biohacking, but I am a true fan of yoga. Last year, when we were around speaking at the same time, you presented a very interesting topic, which was yogis were the original biohackers.
Exactly.
Now, why do you say that yogis were the original biohackers?
A yogi is trying to figure out who he is, but that which is asking the question, so his nervous system, his brain, needs to be optimized. So to optimize your body mind to go to the depth of the question, who am I, is, in my opinion, today used as biohacking. So as a biohacker, you're optimizing your body, you're optimizing your beyond, your mind, and you're trying to go beyond in terms of longevity. These are things that yogis have been doing perennially in different formats. Their journey is to know, who am I? Currently, the biohacking journey is to increase longevity. And eventually, I believe that the longevity journey will lead you to ask very deeply who I truly am. Mm-hmm. So what in me is becoming longer in lifespan and so on?
Mm-hmm. Well, these days, I've been having a lot of biohackers and just a lot of people these days are asking this question, that what is this for? What is the end game? Why are we here? And is this all going to matter?
100%.
Do you get these questions because you speak
Absolutely.
To hundreds of people?
Absolutely.
What's your opinion? What is the end game?
The role of science and biohacking will delve deeply into science. The role of science is to tell you how things are, how the universe started, how your body, mind functions, all of it. Its role is not to tell you why you exist in the first place. Mm-hmm. The science can solve a lot of the misery of life, but when you're crying at night, it won't give you solace. For that, you have philosophy, you have psychology, you have religion, you have spirituality, you have something else. So the science up to a point, but there's an art to living also. So this is very important to understand the scope of each in our life. There is a place for science. There's also a place for something beyond science.
Mm-hmm. And nowadays, we have the third, I would say, the horseman, which is digital technology. So back in the days, yogis were meditating. They were, you know, in the nature, in their fields, doing everything that they do. But back in the day, there was no technology. And now we have everyone else who's just going about doing their work. You know, this was also there for a long period of time. But the advent of technology, and especially social media and the ability to share things, has left a different kind of footprint on us. Some people use it to their advantage. And of course, communication is easy. This is why we're able to talk to everyone on this show. If you're listening to us on the audio version or the video version, we can do this because of technology. So don't get me wrong. I am really grateful for it. But then we have the other side of technology, which tells us, or which science tells us now, that is leading to anxiety, depression, you know, panic attacks, valuing yourself less. So what does the yogic principle say about like this overwhelming technology? Because on today's podcast, what I wanted to do, Manish, is to look at the yogi's viewpoint on certain topics that are prevalent in this society today. So sure, we can learn from that.
So CJ, there will always be a bias. So I'm presenting my bias. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you say a yogi's viewpoint in technology, as long as you're okay to accept that I know about yoga, I'm sharing my viewpoint. Mm-hmm. Because obviously the ancient texts don't speak about this. It didn't exist at that time. So the question is, what does technology do for us? Mm-hmm. And it does marvelous things like you just described. At the same time, it takes away from a lot of our experience. We spend so much time in front of a screen that you meet families where everybody's at the dinner table, but everybody's immersed in their own screen. And the person next to you is going through heartbreak or depression, but you just don't have the time. So it makes... We've never been 8 billion people on the planet, and we've never been so lonely. So it's really weird that this is the case. So I would say the approach in yoga would be to connect to yourself. When you're so connected to yourself, then you don't really need external stimulation. When you're not connected to yourself, then you need that dopamine kick. You need to quickly check what's happening on your feed and so on and so forth. That's one thing. The second thing is that if you're not connected to people and you're not connected to nature, seeing a Netflix documentary on the Himalayas is very different from being in the Himalayas. So that will never be replaced. The human nervous system was designed for millennia, and in the last 25 years has been having to deal with, and in the last 5 years with social media much more. It's not equipped to deal with that. So you have to help it by giving it adequate rest.
You know, it's interesting. I was reading a stat the other day that if you are, for example, a lot of people have screen times of 6 hours and plus, which is very common these days. If it's like 10 hours and plus, then, you know, there's some serious thing we need to look into. But 6 hours is common, according to a lot of reports. And they're saying if you're on social media apps like TikTok or Instagram, and if you're scrolling for 5 minutes, that is like scrolling over 450 feet of information.
It's crazy.
And like you said, we were never designed to consume so much information, let alone like 450 feet, which is like a tower.
Correct.
And all of that is things which are going into our brain. And then at a point, our brain just gives up.
Correct.
And it's interesting that, you know, people more and more are like getting addicted to things like this. But you're saying that if you had something else, something even more superior, like a dopamine kick, which was even a bit better.
Beautiful.
Then, you know, you can create a distance from it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So historically, even if you look at, say, 5,000 years ago, what is the percentage of people who were Buddhas? It'll be a minuscule percentage. The others were tripping on power, were tripping on soma, were tripping on something. Then they were tripping on different things. Today they're tripping on social media. A distracted mind will constantly go for the next kick. But the one that is meditative, historically, even today, will remain meditative.
Oh, that's beautiful. Never thought it that way. We've always been looking for addictions.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. So when we talk about yoga, most people who, I hope if you're listening to this show and you've been following me for some time, you don't have this opinion, because a lot of people generally would think of yoga as just doing, stretching or, fascial release or these asanas, like we call different kind of asanas. Okay. But according to you, what is the true essence of yoga when you think about yoga, or like people in your circle who are highly educated and who are living the experience? What comes to mind when you think about yoga?
See, yoga is meant for a person who wants to understand reality and is unwilling to listen to anybody else's take on it. They want to taste it themselves. So curiosity is the first hallmark. Unlike a nutritionist who studies only food, a yogi studies everything. So anything that you study about yourself, whether it's your body in the form of asana, whether it's your breathing, whether it's your mind in the form of meditation, a yogi is one who works with the body, with the mind, with everything. There is no subject in the history of mankind that has studied everything that makes a human being. So this is the beauty of yoga, that if I want to look out at the night sky, I have to clean my telescope. If I don't have the discipline to clean my telescope, I better believe what NASA tells me about the night sky. That is the metaphor I use for yoga. I want to know who I am. I better take care of my body, my mind, and everything. If I don't have that discipline, let me follow what some ancient masters or modern physicists or anybody is telling me about me. Yoga is not meant for a believer. It's meant for an experimenter. So curiosity is the hallmark.
Do you think so a lot of different people practice different types of yogas and different forms of yogas. Do you think at the end of it all, they come to one universal realization, or everyone's realization point is different as well?
Yeah. The beauty of the Indian spiritual experiment, of which yoga is a part, is that your truth and my truth need not be the same. And today we are in a region that's going through war, conflict, because people feel their truth is truer than the others. This is not the makeup of a yoga practitioner. So whether they come to universal truth or no, we don't know. But the fact that they come to their truth is a universally accepted fact, that everybody comes to their own truth. And that is very beautiful.
You know, yoga always advocates for peace and unity. In fact, the word yoga means union, correct? Yeah. And you just mentioned that at this point, we're going through like a global unrest, and especially in the area that we are in the Middle East, there are new things are happening every day.
Correct.
If, for example, you or a spokesman of yoga had to address these countries who are in like a war zone or who are fighting against each other, what would be that one or two pieces of message that you would like to convey to them?
Sure. I mean, it would be very difficult, because we cannot even fathom, right? We have the luxury of discussing yoga and philosophy. If you're getting bombed right now, or if my mother is dying,
it is.
Yeah. So the first thing would obviously be, that we hear you and we are with you. We understand that you're going through a difficult time. We pray for you. And the other thing would be to, as much as possible, when you have the opportunity, to take a few slow, deep breaths and to take care of your mental health, because, everything will pass. That's the best we can say. It's tough to offer solace. It may seem gimmicky, but the best solace we can offer is that this too will pass.
This is very interesting, because of course, like taking a situation like a war or a political unrest is a very extreme situation. But if we dial this back, because I want to touch back to what you just said, this too shall pass. A lot of people right now, like I mentioned, because of various reasons, might be overwhelmed. It could be their job or their uncle or whoever. And most of the people in maybe Generation Z, which is a bit younger than us, for them, it's, when I speak to a lot of them, they just say that they're looking at a problem and then that's it. Their whole world collapses. And they cannot see beyond, and they cannot see like right before. They're completely in it. And they think that the world is going to collapse. And which is very interesting that you said that, this too shall pass, because ideally, if I look at, I can talk from my experience, like anything challenging that has been in my life or anything that seemed like it will be forever, if I just had the patience to slow down and just know that with time this will pass, like I wish someone told me when I was younger.
Sure thing.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Sure thing.
Is there any way to cultivate this kind of patience? Because again, like patience is going to be one of the biggest virtues that comes to like look, and also like the foresight of not looking at it as right in the moment, but having a longer vision and seeing like, okay, how, what happens in the next 6 months or 3 months or a year or 2 years or 10 years.
Exactly. And I think the way to develop that patience, sabr, is to breathe a bit slower.
Okay.
So at the end of the day, I mean, there are many different techniques. Mm-hmm. The one that I like the most is breath, mm-hmm. because it doesn't require me to bring on another element. It doesn't require any belief system. The fact that I'm breathing is a given, and I can bring it under my volitional control. So instead of my brainstem, my cortex does the work or gets activated. So I like to focus on slowing down breath. For somebody else, it may be to say a mantra. For somebody else, it may be to do something else. Mm-hmm. I think that's an added thing. So I want to focus on what my mother is saying, but I'm highly stressed with my work. It's, you know, it's a deadline. So maybe I may use a mantra to calm my mind. So I'm using something additional to calm me. With breath, there's nothing additional. Something in me is just watching the breath and I slow down. So I like breathing. Mm-hmm. So in situations like that, it's nice to just slow down the breathing. Mm-hmm. And that which is going through all this turmoil will settle down.
Mm-hmm. Breathwork or breathing is rather very interesting because we call it pranayama.
Yeah.
Right. And that is based on the concept that our breath is a life force energy.
Yeah.
And this energy is circulating around the body. Yeah. And the more control you have over your breath, you can have more control over your life. Correct?
100%.
And for example, like let's say
you can live more fully.
Yeah. In the ancient concepts, like or the ancient teachings, breath has been really like in the Eastern philosophies, even in Taoism.
Yeah.
And you look at traditional Chinese medicine, okay. and they have this concept of qi, which is also like a life force energy.
Yes.
How were yogis able to figure out way back, like we're going thousands and thousands of years back?
Yeah.
Was it through experimentation or do you know about this? Like, is there a text which taught people how to breathe and then everyone started following? Like, how did it start? Like, how did someone figure out, if I just breathe slowly, things start changing?
It's through experimentation. Mm-hmm. See, CJ, the body mind has not really changed for the last 20,000 years, at least recorded history, say 10,000 years. We're dealing with the same things. So through experimentation, we assume that the yogis figured out that it's a very simple thing also. Whether that was the trigger, I don't know. Like if you were to try to thread a needle while breathing, it's not possible. Mm. You can try this and whenever your mind needs focus, the body mind will stop breathing. And so therefore, they said that therefore if I stop the breathing, mm-hmm. I will get the focus. When focus is needed, the body mind shuts the breath first. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if I shut the breath, I'll get that focus. Mm-hmm. So the whole art of pranayama became about holding the breath. Mm-hmm. When breath is held, there is no thought. And that becomes a doorway into meditation. So through experimentation, so pranayama, we're not really interested in the oxygen or the carbon dioxide. We're interested in that which is animating life. Prana is what animates life. And when I hold the breath, the mind comes to a standstill. So that's the doorway to meditation. Mm-hmm.
Have you experimented yourself or seen, or what are your thoughts on some of these very popular breathwork techniques like the Wim Hof?
Yeah.
A method or like, you know, these breath holds or box breathing.
Yes.
Some elements require you to breathe more
and
breathe faster, which is to amp up the nervous system. And some allow you to breathe like slowly.
Okay. I've tried all of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, but I've tried a lot of them. And there are only four things you can do with breath. You can make it faster. You can make it slower. You can shut it. Mm-hmm. and you can balance your two nostrils. Mm-hmm. Now, these four have been described 3,000-5,000 years ago, and therefore there's nothing new to. So it's just a combination. So Bhairav Dhyan used to be about lying down on your flat on your back, breathing in and out, forcefully in and out, in and out. Mm-hmm. That is used in as holotropic breathing.
Correct. Yeah.
Exactly the same. A lot of the work with Wim Hof is from Tummo breathing in Tibetan breathing techniques. So a lot of what we call breathwork has been experimented. At the end of the day, you cannot invent a new breathing technique. Mm-hmm. Somebody would have done it.
Yeah.
So all of them are very beautiful for different purposes. Some of, like Wim Hof would be for developing resilience. Mm-hmm. The ice bath is just a part of the resilience training. For holotropic, it would be about going into more sort of deeper dimensions of subconscious, unconscious. Mm-hmm. For a yogi, they're just trying to figure out who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And breath is a way to stop this from talking.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Because we are on the topic of breath work, I'll tell you two things that I recently experienced. So I have a friend in my gym called Hanny. Shout out to Hanny. So he brings me, a few days ago, he brings me this very thin piece of straw. And he's like, after we finish our workout, we're going to lie down, legs up in the sky. We're going to take a deep breath through our nostrils.
Yeah.
Fill the diaphragm, and then exhale as low as we can using the straw.
Beautiful.
And it's so, like, at first I was like, yeah, I've had some biohacking devices where you can literally train your lungs by it creates a resistance pattern on your breath. So you just have to blow really hard. It trains your muscles. But with this super simple experiment, it was really challenging to slow down the breath and to breathe through the straw because you have no other option while you have a full diaphragm. And when we finished like a 5-minute round, we got up, started feeling like not dizzy,
but lightheaded.
Exactly. And I was in an event a few weeks ago with Wim Hof's daughter, Laura Hof, and she led us through a breathwork practice, which included a lot of breath holding.
Correct.
Not exactly like holotropic, but similar for anyone who's tried.
Yeah.
And there were times that, you know, I just was out of my body, reality kind of shifts. Changes.
Correct.
Time perception changes.
Correct.
So, yeah, that's something I wanted to share with you. Tried these two things recently, and it was, once you do it in a guided way, it's completely different than what you've heard on a YouTube video.
Correct, for sure. I mean, the world record for a breath hold without pure oxygen is about 11 and a half minutes.
Okay.
With pure oxygen is about 22 and a half minutes.
Mm-hmm.
In the yogic scriptures, they say that the yogi finishes breathing training when he can hold the breath inside for 3 hours. Now, we've never seen this, but that's what the scripture says, and says that at that time the body levitates.
Wow.
We don't know. Yeah? Mm-hmm. But that's just described there. The breath hold is really important for multiple reasons. In fact, when a person has anxiety, a lot of the time in the attack, the person is short of breath and they feel they are short of oxygen. The funny thing is that when they are tested during an anxiety attack, there is no change in the oxygen levels. It's just that the CO2 has come a bit low because they've breathed out so fast. So the ideal thing to do at that time is to stop the breathing. So that is from the medical perspective, but it's very interesting because the Buddha used to teach this technique. Whenever you're stressed, just stop breathing. Now, the Buddha is a psychologist par excellence. For 2,500 years, his psychology has not been changed. So his understanding of the mind is so beautiful that everything is impermanent. I'm facing this heartbreak and I'm thinking about my heartbreak. If I have the awareness to stop breathing, by the time I start breathing again, that thought would have just gone.
Mm-hmm.
It is so random, the next thought may have no connection with this. But I don't have the awareness at that point to stop that.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the best ways to change the mind is to change the breath.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I've also heard that people who breathe slowly, they also live for a long time, right? So it's like a longevity hack as well.
Exactly. So by looking at the animal kingdom,
the
animals that breathe slow live long,
and
our dogs and cats that breathe fast die much faster.
Amazing. Let's talk about something you also mentioned. You spoke about mantras.
Yeah.
Now, maybe some people who are listening to us don't know about them.
Sure.
Can you just give us an explanation of what mantras are?
Sure. The word mantra, manate trayate iti mantram. Mantra is that which allows me to overcome the compulsiveness of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
there are some, say everything in me is, or you or anything, is vibrating. So it's obviously vibrating at a frequency. Mm-hmm. That frequency can be matched or can be, you can decide on a particular frequency based on what you want. So if you want peace in your life, then there's a certain frequency for that and specifically a certain mantra for that. Now, the mantra is my the whole day my mind is talking to me. If I give it something to talk consciously, then at least it's going per what I want. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Now, this could be a prayer. This could be an affirmation. This could even be a song that's mm-hmm. going on in my mind. I'm doing it. And eventually it happens on its own, called Ajapa Japa. Mantra is specifically a Sanskrit formula. So the in mantra, the words and the meaning of the words are not so important. The sonic formula is important. So if I say Asatoma Sadgamaya, and if I pronounce that differently, it has a different impact on my spota or my neural circuitry. So mantra is specific. So H2O and H3O are not the same. In the same way, mantra is specific sonic formula to bring about a certain experience of my life. So if I want to bring abundance in my life, then I'll do a mantra for that. And if I want to bring in health in my life, I'll do a mantra for that. So that is the power of mantra. It's different from prayer, even though prayer is also working with words, but prayer is dependent on bhav. It's dependent on my feeling. So when I say the Our Father prayer, it's dependent on my feeling for the Christian prayer, the Our Father. But it was not created in the language that I'm using, English. Whereas mantras are in Sanskrit, the meaning is not important. Even if I don't understand the meaning, just the right sonic syllable formula has an impact on my mind. And this is something very important to understand. So bhajan or kirtan is like prayer. It's to do with my bhav. Mantra has nothing to do with my bhav. It's a sonic formula. So the pronunciation has to be spot on. Even us as Hindi speakers, to get the right Sanskrit pronunciation is tough. And Sanskrit is a unique language because the word itself means perfect. And it was heard. These are the only things the mouth can make. Whereas English is not like that, right? That where in Sanskrit, it's specific sounds. So K, K, G, G, N are the only sounds that can be created gutturally. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I want to touch my tongue to my tooth, T, T, D, D,
I get what you mean.
Yeah. You cannot make a sixth.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to make a sound with my lips, P, P, B, B, M, you cannot make a sixth.
Mm-hmm.
So it was created by understanding the vocal cord.
Mm-hmm.
So it's perfect sonic formula.
Mm-hmm.
So mantra is like that.
How easy is it to, so for example, if someone is someone not Indian, okay,
yeah.
Let's start there.
Yeah.
They want to do a mantra jap.
Yeah.
And they find one of these mantras online.
Yeah.
Is it important to go to someone who's learned it, like a guru, to get these kind of mantras? Or you could just like ask your best friend who might know how to do it?
Yeah.
Or listen to some music like songs or...
So I think firstly, it's very challenging to get the right pronunciation, mm-hmm. as I think. But it doesn't matter whether it's a guru or your friend who's helping you to get the right mantra. See, the guru gives a mantra
mm-hmm.
that helps you overcome some part of your personality that is lacking.
Mm-hmm.
That's the traditional approach.
That's a special mantra.
Yeah. But there are so many mantras that are
mm-hmm.
commonplace.
Mm-hmm.
And also the beauty of the Vedic system is that a lot of the mantras are not to any deity. Like Asatoma Sadgamaya is not to anybody.
Can you explain what that means?
Asat, untruth, Asatoma Sadgamaya. Lead me from untruth to truth.
Mm-hmm.
Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya. From ignorance to enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrityorma Amritangamaya. From death to eternal life.
Mm-hmm.
Asatoma Sadgamaya, Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amritangamaya. So, it is not to any particular deity. It is just that lead me from untruth to truth. So you can
mm-hmm.
say this to whoever you worship.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beauty of the Vedic system. There are some mantras that are specific to certain deities.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a practicing Christian, for example, I was born in a Catholic family.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose I was a practicing Christian, I can still choose a Vedic mantra and dedicated to whoever I wish to. It has nothing to do with deity. So that's one of the important things to understand. And the second thing is that if you're taking a common one like that, you can ask anybody to help you with the pronunciation. It's totally fine. It's sonic formula. And if you get the pronunciation wrong, it can still work with your bhav, with your feeling, but it won't have the sonic formula
alignment.
Yeah. Okay. That has to be specific pronunciation.
Okay, interesting. When we speak about resilience, you mentioned ice bath, and that's one of the newer ways of you know, it's the trend right now. And the idea is, for anyone who's listening, the ice bath, it looks difficult and it is difficult.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why you would want to enter it, because you want to make your nervous system, your brain, and just your body resilient to facing something that's uncomfortable, which a lot of people avoid.
Correct.
And they say, like, as a generation or as generations are progressing, we're becoming less resilient. Of course, because, you know, right now we're in an air-conditioned room, you know, away from sunlight. Yes. We can switch it to be hot or cold. Conveniences are there. But how does someone cultivate resilience where everything in the world is getting so easy that it's so easier, like it's easy not to be resilient enough?
Sure. I think the main cultivation would be empathy.
Okay.
So as we touched upon this a little earlier in our conversation, there is a war going on very close by to where we are in Dubai. Mm-hmm. If I empathize, then life is not easy. If I care not, if I choose not to care, then I can be in my bubble. And then I need a hack to train my resilience. But if I'm alive to life, that so many people in the city we are in are struggling for a meal in a labor camp. So many people are struggling just outside. The people here, their families are struggling. My families, for example, in India may be struggling something else. My friend may be going through depression. I may be going through heartbreak. If I don't insulate myself from life, resilience training is happening 24/7. If I insulate myself from life, then I lose my resilience. So I would say that the main thing to develop resilience is to have empathy and to be able to understand that everything is not smooth sailing. Everything is not sweet.
That's interesting. I think you're the first person that I'm hearing who's presented it that way. Because a lot of people would be like, oh yeah, just be stronger and do like the breath work or do red light or whatever.
Okay.
But to have empathy, to be aware of what's going on so you understand you are actually a part of the system, and like it, all these things are not, you're not immune to them.
Okay.
You might be the most healthiest. You might be living till 150. You might have all the biohacks, but you're certainly not, you know, immune to all of these things. This can happen to you anytime.
Exactly.
How do you meditate a lot?
I do.
Okay. What happens to time when you're meditating, or the perception of time? Because when you're looking at social media, time disappears.
Yeah.
When you switch on the Netflix show or documentary or whatever,
correct,
time disappears.
That's right.
But then when you want to send that email, or like when you're doing an Excel work or something that you don't like,
correct,
you feel that time is not going away.
Yes.
Or if you're like left in a room without your phone, suddenly seems much more longer than, you know, time becomes longer. So I want to know, like, from your standpoint or from a yogi standpoint, is there anything specifically mentioned about this whole perception of time?
I'll just share one interesting thing before I get into that. So I often in my workshops, I ask people to just close their eyes and I tell them, start from now and let me know whenever you feel 1 minute is over, raise your hand.
Okay.
Yeah, just say, I'm 40, but I may not know what 1 minute is and I've lived 40 years.
Yeah.
So when we do it, recently I was doing this at a workshop and one person raised their hand after 18 seconds.
Yeah.
So their perception of a minute is 18 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And the longest was a person who raised their hand after 2 minutes and 12 seconds. So now that same 1 minute is stretched and compressed in these two people's minds based on what they perceive as. So time is very, very different, right? When it comes to, I found that very fascinating.
It's very interesting. I've never thought about it. It should be the next experiment I'll do when I go to like some classes.
In fact, this is the thing that I do as an entry point when when I'm asked to teach meditation to anybody for that matter, first, do you know what 1 minute is? Because you keep telling me I don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
And 1 day has been 1 day for millennia. It has always been the same 24 hours on planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
But people say modern life is so fast.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have time. You don't know what 1 minute is. Then how can you say you don't have time? First, know what you're talking about. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
When to the question of what happens to time in meditation, for me, this is my experience, and I don't know too much about it, but in meditation, there hits a point where I'm not there. Everything shuts. When that happens, even for a short amount of time, it is very refreshing. That's the most refreshing thing that happens to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like deep sleep, but I'm awake. At that moment, there is time has stopped because my storyline has stopped. There is time because my body is in time, but the mind has become quiet. So when the mind is no more there, it's not that the mind is peaceful, it is non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, then therefore, my experience of time is non-existent because the experiencer isn't mm-hmm. there. So that, I don't know if that...
Yeah, yeah? It gives a different approach to look at time.
Yeah.
But you also mentioned that a lot of people say they don't have time.
Yeah.
What do you tell people when they say, I don't have time to meditate or I don't have time to do yoga? What do you tell them?
Ideally, like, suppose you're in the kitchen mm-hmm. or you're taking a walk. If you can just slow down breathing. This is what happens to me,
mm-hmm.
that some days I'm rushed between 2-3 things.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's because of the training. Suddenly, for some reason, the body will just slow down the breathing.
Automatically?
Yeah.
Okay.
And suddenly I'm aware, oh, okay, I have a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... in my mind, I was thinking, okay, I have to do this, I have to rush to the next. But suddenly when it slows things down,
mm-hmm.
there is always time. There's never a rush, actually.
Mm-hmm. So is it more that people have to start looking at their awareness?
Yeah. So, like, maybe when they are cooking and, you know, so on and so forth, or somebody is...
Stop your breathing.
Yeah. Or just slow it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, or some client is, you know, shouting or whatever it may be. If you just slow down your breathing,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the times, also with mindfulness training and meditation, you begin to know what you don't need in your day.
Mm-hmm.
That saves a lot of time. So if you don't know what you don't need, then you'll be doing a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
So suppose you're in a meeting and you're also rushing. We sit with a lot of startups sometimes, right? So startups will be giving us the whole picture of how they change the world.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get very involved in that thing, your heart rate goes up, your thinking goes up. Before you know, you're tired because... And then when you come out of the meeting after 1 or 2 days, you realize, okay, nothing much is changing.
Mm-hmm.
But at that moment, if your breathing is really slow, you can actually hear what the person is saying. And then you have a sense of peace within.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what not to do. And that, I think, is the critical element in having time, knowing mm-hmm. what not to do.
Okay, that's interesting because a lot of the people, they want to start adding more things that will buy them more times. But
yeah.
like, this is a unique perspective. Just look at what you don't need.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
look at the denominator,
Correct.
Reduce that, and then you'll have a good number.
Exactly. You see this a lot in office politics, mm-hmm. right? Somebody wants to prove themselves and they mm-hmm. do so many things that has mm-hmm. nothing to do with the work.
Mm-hmm.
And then they don't have time.
Mm-hmm. What about attachment? Mm-hmm. I know that traditional cultures, they are always talking about not to be attached to a lot of things, but sure. these days we're attached to mostly material positions, we're attached to our careers, we're attached to our identities.
Yeah.
What do you have to tell us about attachment?
Sure. So I think we are giving ourselves bad press by saying
mm-hmm.
in modern times we are more attached.
Okay.
Historically, people have always been attached.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the people, you know, the kings of years gone by, they were mm-hmm.
they wanted to hold on to their goal.
Yeah. Quite material also. Mm. We've always been.
Okay.
In terms of thing, I mean, it comes down to knowing what gives you joy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most enjoyable things in life is sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need anything to sleep. It's not the cushion or the mattress. There's a peace of mind
mm-hmm.
that gives you that sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, I was traveling and I had a connecting flight. And they wouldn't allow me to enter the airport. So it was my birthday night and I was sleeping in an airport. And I said, never again. I'll never do this again. Mm-hmm. And a couple of hours later, I slept. When I woke up, I was so happy that at age 43, I can be peaceful sleeping in a crowded airport. Mm-hmm. You don't need anything to be happy.
That's a superpower. You have to tell us, how have yogis optimized their sleep? I think this is the most exciting part that everyone would want to know.
Sure. But just before I do this, that's the whole thing that, you know, the things that that genuinely give you happiness, playing with your child, you know, watching a sunrise, you don't need too much. You think that if I get the most beautiful house, you know, but actually what gives you joy is that sleep. You were sleeping happily on the floor. Mm-hmm. I say this, you know, when I was poor, this is just poetry. When I was poor, I slept with my doors open. Now that I'm rich, I'm trying to protect things and I close all the doors and I wonder who was richer. Mm. So
beautiful.
You get so many things, the rest of your life you spend as a watchman for your things. Mm. And those days when you had nothing, you were more. It doesn't mean that you have to lose everything. It just means that, you know, understand what is giving the happiness. It's not that super mattress. Mm-hmm. It is your peace of mind, your conversation with your family.
Mm-hmm. Now going back to the sleep. Yeah. Tell us.
For me, what I use is that, see, a lot of people say that they take a lot of time to fall asleep. Mm-hmm. Before I go to sleep, I always sit in meditation. I just sit for about 10 minutes, breathing slowly. That allows me to process everything. It happens thing. Then when I hit the bed, I'm off in less than a minute, always. And I think that is critical. You need that little, if you don't do it, then the mind will have a lot of dreams and it'll try to process what's gone on through the day. It's doing that for me, I'm sure. But I've given it that 10 minutes before. Of course, the other things we already know, eat well in advance, dark. I always use eye patch. Don't use your phone. Keep it outside. I always use an eye patch. Mm-hmm. Even though there are dark curtains, I find that makes a cocoon for me. But the fundamental thing I feel is that because I sit for 10 minutes before I sleep, a lot of the issues settle down. And I don't like the idea of sleeping when you're tired. I like the idea of being relaxed to sleep.
Great. Manish, this has been a fantastic conversation. Okay. We've had tactical tips, and this is what I love when we're talking, even in our last podcast, we're giving people tactical tips on what to do and how to process things and your viewpoint on things, which I think is amazing. Are you doing anything exciting anytime soon?
Yes, yes.
What's exciting for you?
We're doing this experience back in Dubai, which is the last full moon of the year. It's December 14th, so we get different musicians to come and play in Kudra by the desert. The next day on December 15th, we're going into a workers' camp. If you have the time, please come. We celebrated Diwali at a workers' camp. We go back there with the best musicians to perform for the 800 workers.
Wow.
And we serve them a meal. And beautiful. That was such a beautiful experience to celebrate in a way with people who have built this city, who are building this city.
That's beautiful. We'll put all the details in the show notes for anyone who wants to find out.
Sure.
I'll also put your Instagram. Are you happy sharing your email?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So we'll put all of those things in. Manish, this is amazing. Thank you, brother. I'm always grateful to spend time with you. Thank you so much for coming. And thank you for doing all the great work that you're doing.
Can I also take the moment to say I really appreciate, admire all the work you do.
Thank you.
And the fact that you're spreading knowledge of different streams. And I look forward to spending another full moon with you someplace.
Of course, we shall. And this is me, CJ, your host, signing out of the Shift with CJ podcast. Everyone who's listening, thank you so much for joining us. May you have a great week, a great year, a great lifetime. Thank you. I'll see you in the next one.
Your time and presence with us through this podcast is highly appreciated. If you want to learn more, then head over to our website, www.shiftwithcj.com.